You don't need to scramble around to do your last-minute holiday shopping, not with Amazon.com's two-day shipping. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob Has a Podcast whenever you start your shopping on Amazon with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, use the link, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with your post-finale coverage to take a deep dive into why Jeremy won and by proxy, why Spencer, Tasha, Kelly, Kimmy, and Keith all lost. And here with me to talk about it is the man who has written his own set of rules for how to win Survivor. Here is the great David Bloomberg.
Hi Rob, how are you?
I'm doing good, David. How are you?
Good, good. Are you recovered from all that partying after the finale there?
I really did not party much. It was a very claustrophobic scene at the party after the finale, and I really was probably only there for about an hour before I said, let me just get out of here and go start working on that footage.
So you weren't hanging out all night with Steven then and having the hangover the next morning?
No, I was not. I was having the baby hangover, where I went home and then hung out all night with my son. So that was probably not as fun, but I guess in the long run, probably more rewarding, right?
Yes, yes, I would say so.
I was saying it right before we came on with these two babies right now. Really, never have I been closer to accepting a return to Survivor. 39 days seems like, Keith says it's not fun. I'd like to challenge him on that.
Well, you know, there's not fun, and then there's different levels of less fun. You'd probably get about the same amount of sleep out there on the bamboo.
Right.
So you wouldn't be hurt in that regard.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might have someone screeching in your ear out there, you know, just like a baby.
Yeah, I'm considering it. Strongly considering it right now.
Well, it is interesting how many of the players this season came back and said, I'm done.
Yeah. All right. So, well, when Jeremy has his baby and it's very fresh in his mind, we can ask him which is harder. All right. Let's dive into talking about this. Now, do you want to start with the people that lost, or do you want to start with the people that won, or do you want to go through the rules and sort of talk about everybody in each thing?
I think it's best if we go through the rules in, you know, in order. But first, of course, I think we have to pat ourselves on the back because the final prediction of Jeremy was correct.
I mean, this was not exactly a big curveball for anybody. I mean, we sort of like based on the edit and, you know, that sort of like seeps into everything. I mean, this was not a blindside in terms of Jeremy winning.
You're right. You're right. But hey, you know, I think we both deserve to take credit where it's due. And I did think there was a little bit of a chance if things had gone a little differently in that crazy tribal council, it could have been Kelly. So I don't think any of us thought it would be a shutout. So, you know, Jeremy's sweep certainly deserves recognition. And we saw his win coming, like you said, but the other players seemingly didn't. So, as you mentioned, it's finally time to talk about why Jeremy won, and in the process, why Kimmy, Keith, Kelly, Tasha, and Spencer lost. And just to get out ahead and respond to the people posting on the Survivor Facebook page that you discussed with Josh, no, it was not because Val is pregnant.
Are you positive?
I am positive.
Yeah, I was thinking about this win earlier today, and I mean, it almost is like a rather uncontested win that ultimately went down for Jeremy.
You're right. You're right. I mean, there was some decent discussion at the final tribal council, and, you know, obviously we'll get to that, but it certainly was just kind of a downhill stroll for him at that point, it seemed.
Well, let's talk about how exactly that happened. Why don't we start with the first rule, which is, of course, is to scheme and plot.
Well, you know, this was an interesting final six. And I would say all but one of them followed this rule to some extent. I'm sure you can guess who the other one was.
Yeah.
So we might as well address Keith first. He said in his Day After and Ponderosa videos that he actually had a couple of alliances. So, you know, good on Keith for finally figuring out what that was. But that some flipped on him. He could have made some changes, but he didn't want to lie to people and have to keep track of who he told what. So I guess the upshot there is he can't scheme and plot because he can't remember how to stick to the plan.
Well, you got
to
keep things easy for Keith. And for Keith, I think it's easier for him not to lie to people because he can't remember the lies that he tells. So he at least knows himself and is going to just be a straight shooter.
Right, right. And in the end, he said he's not going to miss paying the bills because he doesn't have $1 million. And he can say that he didn't lie to 19 other people, which, you know, that's great. And Keith seems to be a really nice guy. But it gets back to what we were talking about last week. This is a game. You have to play it like a game, not like real life. So that is how we view the players through the lens of these rules. Keith said that for Survivor, you've got to be physically and mentally prepared. And, quote, maybe I'm not the most mental guy prepared. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that really showed when Josh asked Keith about voting blocks in your live know-it-alls after the finale, and Keith replied, I have no clue.
Yeah.
That about sums it up.
Okay, so Keith did not scheme and plot enough, but everybody else in your mind did?
Yeah, it may have been less obvious for some, but I still think they were all scheming and plotting to some extent or another. On the flip side of Keith, we have Jeremy, whom Kimmy dubbed the Godfather. And what we've heard from her and others is that Jeremy didn't like to have big powwows of all the people in his alliance at the same time. He would meet with them individually and then be the middleman to talk to one and then take the information to the others. In other words, he controlled that flow of information. And he also was the one with all the relationships. Kimmy even said she wasn't particularly close with Spencer and Tasha. They were in her alliance, but it was through Jeremy, not direct relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeremy managed to put himself in this pivotal spot within the game. He told everyone he had their backs and then played them against each other when it was necessary. He guided a lot of the votes. He protected his allies, targeted his enemies. So, for example, when Steven wanted to vote out Joe, Jeremy knew about it. When Savage or Joe wanted to vote out Steven, Jeremy knew about it. And he was able to forestall or counter those votes in many cases because he was trusted by pretty much everyone in the extended alliance.
Yeah.
And throughout it all, his name never came up. Even after Spencer surprised Jeremy and successfully voted out Steven, Spencer came right back to Jeremy again.
Mm-hmm.
We wondered why at the time, and I think it's a little clearer now. This, all of it, helped show the jury just how in control of the game Jeremy was through most of it.
Yeah.
Kimmy said in her interview with you that she tried to encourage people to get together and vote off Jeremy, but it wasn't happening. As Jeremy said in interviews, if you are trusted by people, it's a lot less likely that they will want to vote you out. And I think this goes back to something I said last week, that one of the most interesting parts of the bonus scenes that week was that nobody was talking about being worried about Jeremy. Everyone was with him, but he orchestrated it so they didn't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
He even said if they had done so, he'd have been dead. It was a rather Brian Hydeck-esque strategy. So talk about old school there.
I hear what you're saying on one hand, but it's almost like I feel like Tasha was like, well, I don't mind losing to Jeremy. So I don't know if she felt like I can't beat anybody, so I might as well lose to Jeremy. But it really did feel like that she says that she knew she was going to lose to Jeremy, but didn't really try to not go to the end with Jeremy. Spencer, I think, felt like maybe there was a way to beat Jeremy, but also probably to a lesser degree than Tasha was like, well, I'm probably going to lose to Jeremy. Maybe I have a shot.
Right, right. And we'll get to them. And there's a lot to talk about with those two and, at, you know, that final three situation as well. I don't know what Tasha really was thinking in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some people come out of the game and look back on it and they have, whether you want to call it a reason or an excuse, you know, to say, well, I knew I wasn't going to win no matter who I faced, so I figured I might as well go with this person. We've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the situation with Tasha. She may be 100% correct in saying what she said, but whatever it was, as we'll see, you know, as we discuss further, it wasn't going to work for her. But even aside from those two, you know, we had Kimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I said before that Keith really was the only one who didn't do any scheming and plotting.
Yeah.
Even Kimmy wasn't just along for the ride.
No, she wasn't.
She was doing some... Right. She was doing some thinking and scheming. It just didn't really come to fruition, and we didn't see a lot of it until the end. In her Ponderosa video, she said she wanted to stay in an alliance until she made her big move. The problem that I see was that she waited too long, and then she got busted, not by Jeremy, whom she duped by his admission, but by Spencer and Tasha. If she had made her move sooner, she wouldn't have had to rely on a complicated vote-splitting situation and might have actually been able to pull it off. I mean, admittedly, it would have relied somewhat on Abby Maria, but at least there would have been a better chance.
See, I disagree. I think that her plan was great. I thought that she had a wonderful plan. I think it was poorly executed. I don't know what she could have done to improve that. I think it was probably because, boy, we never see Kimmy talking with Kelly. We never see Kimmy talking with Keith. Now she's talking to both of them today after the challenge. I think that that's what sort of like raised suspicions among Tasha and Spencer. So if she would have maybe been working on that plan earlier, or maybe figured out a way to be able to tell Kelly and Keith that plan before they got to tribal council where they wouldn't have got busted, I think she would have been set up really well if that worked out.
Well, I guess that goes back to, you know, was it the plan or the execution, or is the execution part of the plan? You know, is it a good plan if part of that plan is you have to talk to people who you've never really talked to before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it could have been a good plan if she had reasons to go off and talk to Kelly and Keith, but without those reasons, you know, the plan kind of falls on its face a little bit.
I mean, maybe if she could have just like not even given them the whole download and was like, trust me, vote for Jeremy, trust me, vote for Jeremy. Like I'll explain more later and then go from there.
Yeah. Maybe she could have sat there trying to get Keith's attention for a while.
You know, sure. Psst, psst. Sure. But you could argue of the final six, the person that tried to upset the Jeremy is going to win apple cart the hardest was Kimmy.
Well, that's true. At least she was trying at that point. I mean, obviously, Kelly and Keith were trying, but they were on the outs, so they had to rely on someone on the inside.
Yeah.
And certainly that wasn't going to be Tasha or Spencer.
Yeah, maybe Kelly was tapped into what was going on, but Kimmy, of the people that were in that alliance with Jeremy, she seemed to be the one person, maybe besides Jeremy, that was like, Jeremy will win if he gets to the end.
Right, right. And, you know, Tasha does deserve credit for doing some scheming and plotting, but most of that I think was earlier in the game when she was on Anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, if we look back that far, there was no reason she should ever have made it out of Anchor. We can blame Abby Maria or Wu, or we can credit her and Savage, and I think she deserves credit for that. She took a bad situation and turned her minority position into a position of power.
Yeah.
And we did also hear from Steven via his blog last week, you know, saying that Tasha had daily check-ins with all of her allies to ensure that they were still on the same page. And then we heard that again in post-game interviews. So she did build bonds and try to honor those bonds. We'll talk about that a little later to see what happened to some of those bonds. But Steven also said in his jury pre-vote video that he believed Tasha was at least as involved strategically as Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, in her interview, Tasha said something very similar to what Jeremy said, that if you're always loyal, no one wants to vote you out when your name comes up. Personally, I didn't see enough evidence of Tasha being as strategic as Jeremy, even based on the extra information that we've heard. So she did scheme, but not as successfully as Jeremy. And as you mentioned, another big problem was that her scheming was primarily geared towards getting her to the final three, which was a final three she couldn't possibly win.
Yeah, I think that the problem for her was that her die was kind of cast once Joe got voted out. I thought that she had something potentially going on the other side. I asked her about the Women's Alliance. She felt like that wasn't a real possibility for her. So the only thing that she could have maybe done was maybe if Kimmy was still around to vote out Jeremy at Final Four. Now, he ultimately is going to win that immunity. But for Tasha, she's just kind of like boxed in. She doesn't really have a different route that she can go at that point, even if she wanted to.
Well, right. But that's what she was preaching the whole time. She built her own box. Yeah. You know, she preached loyal to the end.
Yeah.
And it got her there, but it could never win the game.
Well, I do think that there is some merit to that thinking, especially in this season where everybody's a threat. Everybody's an all-star. So anybody who is going to be sort of like overtly schemey is going to be a big threat, and probably people will not want to work with them. Whereas if somebody could sort of show, hey, I'm a loyal person, you should work with me, I think that that's the kind of person that you would, if you have to trust somebody, you probably want to end up trusting the people who are the people who have shown some sort of loyalty in the game.
Right. And that's a great second or third place game, but it's not a first place game.
Yeah.
When we look at Kelly and Spencer, I think they were actually two people in somewhat similar situations to each other. They both found themselves on the bottom early. They both had to scramble to stick around. But they differ in that Spencer found a home with Jeremy and Tasha, while Kelly never did. Instead, Kelly had to work on creating or maintaining every possible relationship. In her interview with you, she said she came in with her options open. She would have preferred to have a solid alliance, but they just never took. So she adapted. And I would say, you know, given what she had to work with, she did a good job of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a couple portions of this rule that applied quite well to her. For example, this rule says part of plotting and scheming can be making good use of sneakiness. And what is Kelly's main catchphrase of this season?
Sneaky, sneaky.
Very sneaky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just got my RHAP sneaky sneaky shirt in the mail.
Yeah. I think that one came out really good.
Yeah, it did. But on the other side, I feel that Spencer got too settled. You know, at the reunion and ever since, he's talked about his regrets over never targeting Jeremy. And as I watched, I kept wondering why he didn't make a move against Jeremy earlier as we were watching. And now Spencer admits that he should have been a lot more afraid of Jeremy. Mm-hmm. All the votes for the other people were mistakes by his own statements. Spencer has repeatedly said that he underestimated Jeremy and overestimated himself. I think Spencer's a gamer who just got outplayed. He was forced into a no-win, desperate position at Final Four. In the reunion, Spencer said he didn't want to relive every decision when he should have voted out Jeremy. And he's right. He had plans, or so it seems, but he could never make that move. He had set himself up in a good position, but he just couldn't pull the trigger to get rid of Jeremy. And I think a good example was his vote out of Steven and what happened after that.
Yeah.
Spencer said he wanted to show Keith Kelly and Abby Maria that he was willing to be flexible and take out a target. He wanted to move from the bottom to the top somehow. And yes, he did answer one of my questions from earlier by saying he wanted to get the advantage out because he didn't know until the last minute that Steven was going to play it, so it wouldn't be an issue anymore. And by that time, the wheels were already in motion. But he showed them this, and then he stayed solidly with Jeremy and Tasha anyway. He missed at least one opportunity to flip at 7, even with Abby Maria going rogue. And in doing that, he also pissed off Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we wondered why Tasha and, you know, especially Spencer didn't make a move against Jeremy earlier. And we already discussed Tasha. But with Spencer, I just don't know. He couldn't pull the trigger. And that led to the situation that we were just talking about, that they played good final three games, but not good winning games.
Yeah.
So I'd say that his biggest mistake was having plans, but not following through to actually carry them out. And I'm forced to wonder if he was gun shy because he came so close to getting voted out early on multiple occasions. He really has Shireen and Cass to thank for keeping him around at Shireen's own expense, as it turned out. I wonder if that kept him from trying again later. I don't know for sure, but you have to think about that.
But I don't think that's the case, because I don't think he makes the flip against Steven at 9, if that is the case. You know, I don't really understand what the problem was with him, because I felt like that he had a pretty good thing going on with Kelly Wentworth. Maybe it was that he didn't want to turn against Tasha. Maybe he felt like it's not the Jeremy thing. Maybe it's he felt like Tasha was his buddy all the way back from Kagyan, and he felt like he couldn't flip against her.
I guess that's possible, but he could have still flipped on Jeremy and kept her around. Now, I don't think Kelly would necessarily have wanted to keep her around, or maybe she would, because, you know, what's one goat or another goat as far as Kelly's, you know, seeing things. I don't know. I can't really explain it. And I don't know that even Spencer can really explain it now or right. wants to talk about it, really.
Yeah, I don't think he really wants to get into it. I think for me, the thing with Spencer, I think the more mind-boggling thing is probably at five. If he's going, if you say, okay, well, he went back to Jeremy. I mean, there's two things. It's really after Steven gets voted out at nine, why doesn't he stick with that new group of five he has with the Kelly, Keith, Joe, and Abby? And then when you go back to even like the decision to not stick with Abby and Kelly and Keith at seven, and then at five to go back to why doesn't he vote with Kelly and Keith? I guess there's really three things.
Right. Right. And that's what he's saying now is, you know, he knows that was a mistake. And, you know, that's why he just turned off Survivor after that point, I guess. I guess there's not a whole lot more we can say that he hasn't already acknowledged. It was a mistake. He didn't make the move that he needed to.
Because the downside of each of those things is like, yeah, you might get to the end, but you won't get any votes. But that's kind of what happened when he didn't flip against his allies.
In what way?
That we would argue that if he made that move at seven to flip on Jeremy and Tasha and Kimmy, that, oh, if he gets to the end, well, now he's not going to get any votes. Or even if he flipped on them at five, well, he might get to the end, but he won't get any votes. But he didn't flip on anybody, and he still didn't get any votes.
Yeah, you're right. I again, it just comes down to what was he thinking at the time? And, you know, in those conditions that he was in with no food, no sleep, who really knows what was going through his mind? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do think in the new school game, in the post-Tony era, I do think you have to just play the bigger game and then just stand there and just sort of like, you know, pound your chest at the tribal council and say, look what I did. Look who all the people I got out. Almost like, you know, not as brazen as Russell Hantz, but I think you just have to say, like, look at my resume.
Oh, right. I agree. And you know, that's something that we'll dig into a little bit later, but you're right. You have to play your game and own it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening for him.
You would think he would at least have gotten Sierra's vote.
Right, right.
So, I made big moves, damn it!
I could just see him screaming that at the final tribal council.
Yeah.
You know, we began discussion of this rule with Keith. And I do think we should end it with him as well, because he had one more final failure in this rule when he decided against pulling out the fake idol before the vote.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I don't know that anything would have changed, as Jeremy could still have voted the same way with the same outcome. But I do think if Keith had been, well, I guess someone other than Keith, he could have gone along with a more complicated plan at the end. You know, for example, RHAP blogger Sarah Freeman suggested on Twitter that he could have pulled it out, said he intended to use it, and that he and Kelly were going to vote one each for Spencer and Jeremy. Then both Spencer and Jeremy would have had to weigh the risk about whether or not the idol was real. And just maybe one of them would have cracked.
But to me, I almost feel like that the era in which that worked, that the window of opportunity for that move is closed. Because I think if you're a Survivor player and someone is making a grand show at Tribal Council with an immunity idol, that person does not have a real idol or is not planning to play that idol. I think that if you are going to use a fake idol, you need to use it in the same exact way in which you would use a real idol. And that's why I really love the idea of Kelly giving the idol to Keith, telling him it was real, and just letting him like sort of like try to be hiding it and stuff. They would have maybe thought that it was real and maybe changed their plan rather than having to tell them, hey, I've got this idol here. We're going to use it tonight. I almost feel like if somebody's telling you that now, you can be assured that an idol will not be played.
Well, that's a good point. I just don't think that she necessarily thought that she could trust him even with something like that. Like, hey, Keith, here's a real idol. Trust me on this. And she was also thinking, you know, really, are they going to believe that I found a third idol at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't have to know that. I mean, if she was worried that they were going to say, oh, Kelly really found a third idol, well, I'm saying just hand it to Keith before you even go to tribal council. Let him walk around with it all day, and he's bound to get caught by somebody.
That is an interesting idea, and I know you discussed it before.
Rather than where Keith is like trying to let people see it, where it's like, come on, he's being so obvious with it. It's definitely not a real idol. If you tell him it's a real idol, then he's going to be trying not as obviously to flaunt it around, and then people might believe he has the real idol, and then maybe people are trying to move. I just feel like if you're a survivor and people are saying, making a big to-do at tribal council about what they're going to do with an idol, they're not playing it, or it's not real.
Well, I mean, obviously he would have had to play it if it were real. So you're right. They would have had to determine it was fake. It was a pretty darn good-looking idol, I have
to
say, for a fake one. But yeah, I guess that, you know, in retrospect, that probably is the best way to deal with it, knowing Keith. Don't give him a plan to stick with. Give him what he thinks is a true story.
Yeah, he has to believe it. He has to believe it. I mean, you're right. Sending him to do a bank robbery. You can't tell him, like, and by the way, this is a fake gun I'm giving you to go into the bank. So just so you know, it's a fake gun. I mean, you got to tell him it's a real gun going into the pull off the bank robbery.
Yeah, and then the only downside is when he points it at someone and pulls the trigger and nothing happens and they shoot him. Or in this case, he gives it to Jeff and finds out that he's voted out anyway.
Right. So, if it doesn't work, it didn't work. And what are you going to do? I mean, that's a problem for another day, that Kelly's in the final three and doesn't have Keith's vote. I mean, you're just like, it's a bit of a Hail Mary to begin with. The hope is that something ends up happening where somebody blinks and says, okay, I'll vote with you guys. We still don't understand why Spencer didn't vote with them.
Nope. Nope. I that part's all a mystery still.
So maybe it's sort of like the flirtation with, boy, you're going to get idled out of the game tonight. Maybe then he believes that a little bit more and maybe end up getting him to flip. I mean, I don't want to nitpick it like this was such a brutal move on Kelly's part. I mean, we're really Monday morning quarterbacking this to death, but it's just fun to talk about in Survivor 31 what the correct play would be in this scenario.
Right, right. And it's possible that they would have all just stuck with it, even if they had caught Keith with what they thought was a real idol. I think that of all the people, Spencer was the most likely to flip and try to save himself. Yeah. But you never know.
All right. Have we touched on rule number two? Don't scheme and plot too much.
Well, you know, as much as we talked about Keith in the first rule, we can quickly dispense with him in the second.
Yes.
He certainly didn't scheme and plot too much.
No, he did not.
No. And for that matter, I think we could similarly remove Tasha from the mix because she preached loyalty and it was the mantra by which she lived out there once she got into a good position. Mm-hmm. She never wavered, so she certainly didn't have to worry about overdoing the scheming.
Yeah.
As we get a little bit more complicated, I still think we can also say this was not a problem for Kelly. Since she was perpetually on the bottom, she was forced to scramble and make whatever deals she could. And since she wasn't anyone's tight ally at the end, she couldn't double cross them. She did whatever she could to move forward and hopefully make the finals. And we know she was sneaky, sneaky when necessary, but she wasn't overly schemey, schemey.
Yeah.
Kelly also followed the part of this rule that says, if any alliances do get out in the open, do not let it be known that you are the decision maker. Jeremy has said in several interviews that he didn't really know how much Kelly was doing until he watched the show. She did a good job of keeping her influence hidden, which I think helped keep the target off of her until much closer to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of Jeremy, again, a more complex case. As we discussed, he put himself into a position where he could have been tagged as doing too much scheming if his compatriots had talked to one another, but they didn't. And since he also vowed loyalty to each of his partners and even showed it with his actions, it never came back to bite him. So that leaves us with Kimmy and Spencer. We discussed already that Kimmy didn't scheme and plot enough earlier in the game when she could have made a difference. But then by the time she started, as you and I talked about already, she was way too obvious about it, such that both Tasha and Spencer noticed it. She had duped Jeremy, but the other two convinced him. I don't think we've ever seen anyone called out in tribal council quite like that. And that was her undoing.
Yeah. So she almost was doing no scheming and plotting. And then she does a little bit at final six. And everybody's like, something's up with Kimmy.
Right. Right. And it was just too obvious what she did.
That's a good point.
As we move on to Spencer, this rule may be our biggest challenge because I don't think it's straightforward. So we already talked about how he didn't make the necessary moves when he should have, but he left people with the impression that he was a big double crosser. And he certainly had done some things to deserve that reputation. Just ask Stephen. I think this was a problem with the way he went about it. So I'm going to say I don't think Spencer schemed and plotted too much. I think he schemed and plotted in the wrong way. And we'll get to that more by the time we get to the fifth rule.
Then let's go ahead and talk about rule number three, which is, of course, be flexible. How did our winner do? Was Jeremy flexible?
Well, considering that he had his web of alliances with a variety of different people, I'd say he was extremely flexible. You know, as just one example, he had Steven set as his number two man, but quickly shifted when Spencer voted him out. He told Kimmy that she was part of the final threesome, but told Spencer the same thing. I'm not sure he even knows who it would have ended up being if Kimmy hadn't turned on them. And, you know, beyond that, Jeremy followed some specific parts of this rule, such as making sure he had his finger on the pulse of as many members of his tribe as possible. So he did a great job here.
Yeah, I agree. He was very flexible with different things along the way. Probably the biggest of which in my mind is that vote where Steven gets voted out and he doesn't just decide to go off on Spencer. It's like, okay, just got to roll with the punches here.
Right, right. And, you know, I would say that Kelly was similarly flexible, though perhaps more out of necessity. We talked earlier about how she had to keep fighting while Spencer settled in. Interestingly, Kelly's continued fight made her a bigger threat at the jury, as we'll talk about later. Spencer, well, we kind of discussed this already. He seemed like he wanted to be flexible, but he couldn't bring himself to do it when it really mattered. And then on the flip side, Kimmy stuck with her alliance, the Bayonne family, too long and then got flexible when it was almost too late.
Mm-hmm.
For the last two people, Tasha, I would say, was not flexible at all and violated a key portion of this rule, which yells at players that they cannot simply tie themselves to one alliance and hope that it survives. In her case, the alliance did survive, but it was at the expense of her own chance of winning because the alliance doesn't get to split the $1 million check.
I would give her credit for being flexible, at least over at Anchor. And maybe it's an inflexibility that you might even want to say. That point in the game where her and Savage are able to turn things around when they're down 4-2. Would you say that was that flexibility in working with people, or was it inflexibility in that they showed resolve and didn't turn on each other?
Maybe a combination of both. It was kind of the flexibility by necessity, the same sort of thing that Kelly had later on, that she had to be open to any possibility.
Yeah.
But as soon as she was in a position where she no longer was forced to be, she went inflexible. So I would say that her preferred game mode was not flexibility. She just did it when she was forced into it.
She also was part of the group that was voting against Steven, but then did an about face when Steven was able to win her back over before he got voted out. So I feel like there's some flexibility there, too.
Yeah, but I think that was because she had been convinced that Steven had gone against the family.
Mm-hmm.
I think Spencer had done a good job, and I believe that I read that Steven, that was the day Steven was sick, and so he couldn't do his daily check-in with her, which she may have interpreted as, why is he avoiding me?
Yeah.
And, that, you know, to support that he had turned against them. So that leaves us with Keith. I don't really know what to say about him. I guess he was as flexible as possible for him and that he was just trying to keep up with what was going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I got on
it. Yeah. So rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Now, I think this is an interesting conversation with Jeremy.
Well,
because he was an emotional guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting in that he controlled himself. When, you know, he said, I think in an interview, that he was crying all the time out there, but he never let them see. And, you know, maybe it's easy to hide the fact that your face is wet with tears when it's also wet with torrential rain. Mm-hmm. But I would say that most of the final six did well in terms of not allowing their emotions to control them. In fact, as I've been thinking about it, I'd actually say that all of them did well, with occasional exceptions. They weren't voting based on friendship or vengeance. They were trying to vote based on strategy, to whatever level they may have individually understood that strategy. And I have to applaud this, because it can be hard to do after being with people for as long as they had been at this point. And on top of it, they were all returning players, so there was all of the emotion attached with that. I would say that the biggest occasion on which this rule was really violated was that it was clear some jurors were pissed off at Spencer for the way he acted at that final four tribal council when he was blackmailing Jeremy. Mm-hmm. But even that was a great move by Jeremy. He knew that he was taking Spencer to the end, but he didn't tell Spencer that. So it got Spencer all riled up, and he was forced to make his case in full view of the rest of the jury. And he ended up going overboard and making it in a, you know, threatening manner. This caused him to come off as arrogant to the jury, and obviously that's never going to help you win. So I would disagree with Kimmy that it was bullying, because I think it was blackmail. But it doesn't change the fact that Spencer did allow himself to get too emotional in front of the jury on that day when it mattered quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that these players, for the most part, were here to play and didn't really get too caught up in their emotions, maybe save for an Abby Maria.
Well, right, but we had already dealt with
her. No, but for the most part, for the season, I feel like this was a pretty unemotional cast in terms of how they dealt with one another.
Yeah, I'd say that's mostly true.
I think you can get into a couple other instances, but for the most part, they were pretty much trying to do at least what they thought were the best moves, even though we've certainly established that they were not always making the best moves for themselves. Rule number five was pretend to be nice, play the social game, and keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself.
Yeah, I'd say that even though they all controlled their emotions almost all the time, that doesn't mean that they were all okay with pretending to be nice and playing the social game. Because these final six covered both ends of the spectrum in that regard. So Jeremy, as we've seen, certainly did a great job here. He noted in his interview with Malcolm that he still has good relationships with everyone. That obviously can't be said for all the players this season. And indeed on most seasons, even when it comes to the winners. But as much as I've already lauded Jeremy for his strategy, I'd say his social gameplay is at least equal, if not better. You can talk about loyalty all you want, but if you can't convince people that you are indeed loyal to them, it won't matter.
Yeah.
But Jeremy was able to do that time and time again.
I think that Jeremy's social game was the strongest aspect of his game. I think that he was sort of, you know, mediocre to above average in terms of the challenges. I think that strategically he was probably good, but a few times in the game he had bad reads on things, specifically the Kimmy thing in the finale. So I think that he did a good job there, but it wasn't like he just had a great read on people all the time. But his social game, I felt like, was probably a 10 out of 10.
Right. And his social game and his strategic game paired well with each other. Now, contrast that with Spencer, who had all sorts of problems with turning on people after he'd have these intensely personal conversations. And this is where it really comes back to haunt him. Rather than his social game and strategic game being two complementary aspects of his overall playing style, like with Jeremy, they ended up being in conflict with one another. So Spencer had bonded too much with a few people. We heard about how he spent a long time talking to Steven after the first attempted Steven vote out, to the point that Steven felt totally comfortable with him, and then Spencer struck again for the actual Steven vote out. He also bonded with Kelly in a similar manner, and she felt similarly betrayed, even saying on Periscope, as I mentioned last week, that she got fishbacked.
Yes.
You know, He didn't just have strategic conversations, but very personal ones. But then he still played strategically. This caused more resentment than if he had just played them like pawns. We even saw one incident right there in front of us at the Double Idol Tribal Council when he was very earnestly assuring Kelly that it wasn't her, all the while knowing full well it was her.
Yeah.
He played his game this way the whole way through. He also had long conversations with Jeremy and Tasha, which I also discussed last week. If he had gone against either of them, I'm sure they would have felt similarly betrayed. I'm thinking that Spencer overcorrected. He was criticized for not playing enough with his emotions the first time, and this time he went too far in the opposite direction, getting too personally involved with people before voting them out, which it makes me think he made the mistake of trying to be a game bot with feelings. But those are two different styles of play. You know, don't get me wrong. It is certainly possible to play a good strategic game that also has good social elements in it, which, you know, that's pretty much what Jeremy did. But you can't completely treat people like pawns after you get to know them on such a personal level.
Part of the problem is, I think, though, that he would not have gotten to this point had he not made those relations with people like with Jeremy and Steven on the post-swap buy-on. That I've referred to Spencer sort of like the guy that people kept letting him sleep on their couch, but then he ends up sort of turning on them and betraying them. But you had people who felt like he was like a nice kid and wanted him in the alliance, and then ultimately, then he did make a couple of flips along the way.
Right. And the problem was turning on those people with whom he had those deep personal connections. I think it's like we said before, if you're going to be a game bot, own it. Say that you were there to play. Play people like pawns and do your best to get ahead. If you're trying to win with your social game, own that. But being a game bot who discovers emotions, makes deep personal connections, and then sacrifices those people as if they are pawns, that's just not a winning play.
All right. What about in terms of the other players besides Jeremy and Spencer?
Well, I think Tasha may have also suffered from some of the same problem as Spencer, though obviously to a much lesser extent. You know, I mentioned earlier how she built bonds and tried to honor those bonds, but Steven discussed in his pre-final tribal council jury video how people might feel burned by that. As with Spencer, he figured people could feel more betrayed because they felt closer to her. Tasha herself thought her social game got her to this point, and she's right to at least some extent. As with Jeremy, she was loyal and gave people little or no reason to target her. The biggest difference was that I think she was brought along as a goat. As Kelly and others have said, she was a higher level goat than someone like Abby Marie or Keith would have been, but she was still someone both Jeremy and Spencer knew they could beat.
I think that the Spencer part of it is interesting because I feel like I wonder if old Bion would have been more pro Tasha. Like if Tasha and Spencer are there with somebody else that's not Kelly, if they're there with Kimmy, what happens?
Right. Oh, you mean at the end? Yeah. So it's Tasha, Spencer, and Kimmy at the end.
Right. Say, like, either Spencer flips and votes out Jeremy at 5, or Kimmy ultimately sticks with the group at 6. This is probably the more realistic scenario. Kimmy sticks with her group at 6, and Jeremy somehow doesn't win the immunity at 5, and then they end up voting out Jeremy in that spot, and then go to the end and vote out Kelly at 4.
That is hard to say. I guess that's probably Tasha's best chance.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, if people were going to be annoyed with Spencer, I think that old Bion probably goes with Tasha, or to her and Kimmy split votes.
Yeah, either one is possible.
She probably has Jeremy's vote. You would think she has Steven's vote. And then it comes down to, you know, Kelly Wiggles. I mean, Tasha wasn't in on that plan to vote out Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different things that could have happened. For example, you know, that final four jury speech that Spencer got all upset about that was read by the jurors as arrogant, that doesn't occur in that situation. Mm-hmm. And without that, maybe Spencer isn't as disliked by the time the final tribal council comes
around. Certainly possible.
Yeah, there's just a lot of moving parts to try to figure out how that one works. I do think that that's Tasha's best chance. I think, you know, when we were talking about this looking forward, not knowing how people felt about Spencer, we didn't think Tasha had any chance, or at least I didn't. And in a situation like that, I would have told you Spencer would win. Now, having seen the jury reactions, it's a little hazier. I still think Spencer might be able to pull it off, but maybe not.
We'll see.
Going back to, you know, this rule for the last few people, for Kelly, I'd say she did a good job of pretending to be nice. Even when she was on opposite sides of alliances or voting blocks, she still seemed to get along with people on a personal level. And I think that's one way that she was able to make several attempts to turn the game around, though obviously in the long run, it didn't end up succeeding. For Kimmy and Keith, their social games were kind of similar to one another. They got along with the other people in the game, and other players generally had good perceptions of them. So no complaints for either of them here.
Okay, rule number 6 is don't be too much of a threat. I think Jeremy did a good job here with this of not being too much of a threat, or at least not appearing to be too much of a threat.
Right. I mean, he was sitting pretty as he maneuvered himself around this one. Steven, in his Jury Speaks video, called Jeremy a survivor unicorn because he's an alpha male leader who actually made it. In other words, he was a threat who beat the target that puts on you.
Mm-hmm.
But I disagree with Steven on that, actually,
okay,
because Jeremy didn't stand out as a threat. He wasn't a challenge threat. He wasn't seen as a strategic threat. In reality, if the other players had been paying attention, they would have seen that Jeremy was a threat. But he managed to not be an obvious one, despite his big muscles and his, you know, abs and everything else. He didn't win challenges until the last and most important one, while other players wanted to target the challenge beasts and the strategists, but they just left him alone. He kept his head down, he directed traffic, and that was all part of his plan to keep meat shields and brain shields around.
You know, it's funny because the social game is the most important part of the game, but nobody, or rarely do people ever say, we've got to target the social threats. It's like, we got to target, oh, this person's a physical threat, this person's a strategic threat. But Jeremy, I've said, I think his biggest strength in this game was his social game. Nobody is like, boy, Jeremy is so well liked by everybody, we have to get rid of him.
Right. And they should have been saying that, you know, as they were getting closer and closer to, you know, final tribal council. And I think we've, you know, spent a fair bit of time saying, hey, guys, you should have done that. But they just didn't. And I'm not sure that I could explain it other than it being a mistake.
Yeah.
Now, the other two players in the final three were brought along because Jeremy did not feel like they were big threats to him. Mm-hmm. Tasha was certainly the most obvious in that regard. And, you know, Jeremy told Malcolm in the post-reunion interview that both he and Spencer knew that Tasha didn't have a good enough resume to win.
Yeah.
Even her work at Angkor was not seen by most of the players on the jury. So by the end, I feel like there wasn't much she could do besides sitting there and watching.
Mm-hmm.
As for Spencer, I think Jeremy saw the writing on the wall there as well. He probably didn't expect a unanimous result, but he had to have seen how the other players and jurors had reacted to Spencer's actions.
Yeah. And I also feel like that there was something with this jury in terms of, like, it was a very grown-up jury. And I felt like that Jeremy had to have felt like that was a good comparison of him versus Spencer up there talking about where they're at in their lives.
Right. Absolutely. And that plays into, you know, Spencer not being as big a threat to Jeremy. But Jeremy knew that Kelly was the biggest threat of anyone else. And she was the only one who had a chance of beating him. It would have been close. And I know that, you know, this has been debated already, but I would say she gets the votes from Sierra and Abby Maria. She probably gets Keith. She might get Cass, might get Spencer, might get Joe, might get Kimmy. You know, Steven posted on Twitter that he thinks Kelly wins if Jeremy boots Spencer at Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a situation that I know you're all too familiar with, it ended up being the final challenge that ultimately ended her game at that point because Jeremy knew he couldn't take her along.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, the two that went before her, Keith and Kimmy, well, they weren't really threats in terms of the final vote if they had made it to the end. And as a matter of fact, they were talked about by many of us as potential goats to get to the end. But they did stand in the way of that final three alliance, that tight-knit group. So you couldn't break up that family. And they were a threat to do that.
All right. In terms of the other players not being too much of a threat, rule number 7, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, and then the strong.
Yeah, this rule pretty much went to hell in a handbasket with the final six tribal council. I mean, it was all a matter of Kimmy trying to position herself to move forward, and then the idols, and, you know, so we're just going to ignore this rule for that one. But it did come back into play for the final five and final four tribal councils, as the threesome voted out the stragglers who were left without a majority to protect them. In other words, the last of the weak. Now, that obviously worked for Jeremy, though, as we've discussed, Tasha and Spencer should have read to the very end of this rule, because there it talks about the need to refocus on the strong, who in this case are those members of your own alliance who threaten your chance to win at the end. This rule recognizes how difficult it will be. It says, this is not an easy task because the fact that they will be popular with the jury may mean they are popular with the rest of your alliance. Still, it is in everyone else's best interest to get rid of such people. And then the rule continues in the final paragraph. One of the most important points to remember is that you want to be better thought of than the people left with you in the final three. If the jury compares you and somebody they like or respect more, you're going to lose. But as we've discussed, neither Spencer nor Tasha made the necessary move to remedy that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came true.
All right. Then in terms of for Jeremy, is there anything that he did right with this?
Yeah. As I said, he played it fine because he knew that he was going to be thought of better than everyone else by the time he got to the end. So for him, voting off the stragglers was the best way to go, because he was the strongest person. He certainly didn't want to encourage them to vote off the strong at the end.
Okay, so are you ready to jump into the appendices?
Yes, I am.
Okay, first appendix is do whatever it takes to get idols. Not only did Jeremy do whatever it took to get idols, he got two idols.
He did. And of course, Kelly did too. And, you know, in a weird twist, both of them played them well both times.
Yeah.
You know, nobody went home with idols in their pockets. Nobody played them and then got no votes. They were played exactly as intended. On top of that, they kept them a secret right up until the end. They didn't tell a soul. They pulled them out and voila. I have nothing to complain about here. You know, anybody who wants to go on Survivor should watch the way both of them played their idols and, you know, do the same thing.
Okay. And then in terms of the final tribal council, this is the second appendix. I think that there's probably a lot of gold to mine here with Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're finally here. And on top of it, we seated those last three jurors in this episode. So first, let's talk about someone who didn't quite make the final three, but was doing her best to get the jury on her side in case she did. Because as we discussed last week, and as Steven mentioned in his blog at the time, Kelly really did go out of her way to involve the jury in the tribal councils, so they knew where she stood and felt like they were still part of the game. Now, unfortunately for her, she didn't have the opportunity to make use of that preparation, but I think other future players would be wise to follow her lead in this regard. And Kelly also tried to get the other players to think a bit more about another portion of this rule, paying attention to who you will face in the final three. Again, all of them should have been thinking about that a while ago. And this appendix says, you need to be aware of who you will face. This means putting aside all thoughts of wanting to face the toughest competition or some BS like that.
Mm-hmm.
You need to bring a goat or two along with you. Bring along somebody you can beat. So, as you might imagine, Tasha violated this very key portion, not just in fact, but also in intent. She repeatedly said she wanted to take a strong threesome to the end. And, you know, okay, I know we might be beating a dead horse at this point, but that's not the way to win. Spencer also violated this part of the rule, again, because he just didn't make the move he needed to at an earlier point. And, you know, as we said, I think that decision is still haunting him today. Jeremy, on the other hand, he did exactly what he needed to do. He got along to that point with the people he needed. So then we move on to the portion of this appendix that talks about once you get to the final tribal council, you have to realize how important jury arguments are. According to Stephen, who was there and saw it all, Spencer had what he described as, quote, a stellar performance at the final tribal council.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I know. He said Spencer displayed genuine humility and talked about why he was forced to betray people close to him. What I think was missing was that he wasn't really forced to do that. He chose to become close to people and should have known full well, and in at least two cases, he did know full well, that he would have to cut them loose soon after. In addition to talking about Spencer, even though I disagreed with him, Stephen also said some things about Tasha, including some things that I think went along with what we were thinking, that Tasha was really in Jeremy's shadow. And I don't think her final tribal council performance really did anything to change that opinion of her in people's minds. Her allies overlapped with those of Jeremy, and Jeremy had just built stronger bonds and showed a stronger case for winning. Jeremy himself, I think he stumbled a little bit at times in at least one of his responses, such as the one trying to be convincing that Spencer deserved to win. But I guess if you're going to stumble, yeah, that's the one to do it on.
Right.
You know?
Like, I'm sorry. I am not that good of an actor. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Sorry. I hope I don't lose my soap opera over this.
Right. And, you know, it's hard to say for sure exactly how well he did overall because we only see a portion of what goes on, but he was certainly able to explain at least parts of his game and reinforce how he connected with people. He also, you know, did well in doing things like kissing up to Sierra nicely by saying good things about her game. And I think most importantly, he didn't screw it up. We've seen people come in with what looked to be, you know, a good chance and just mess up completely. Of course, it didn't hurt that he dropped the baby bomb at the end. I don't think he needed that to win, but hey, why not throw it in there, right?
Yeah.
And it allowed the jury to see his true emotions come out, which only helped seal the deal.
And even though Boston Rob says it was a bad idea, it did not hurt him.
No, it didn't. I mean, maybe it hurt him with people on Twitter and Facebook, but I don't think he cares about them.
Yeah.
You know, I will say that sitting as one of the final three, it must have been tough for them to deal with the hypocrisy in a couple of the jury questions. I mean, Andrew Savage was accusing other people of arrogance. Let me tell you, when I pointed this out on Twitter, how ridiculous it was, it immediately became my most favorited and retweeted tweet ever.
Well, you know, David,
everything.
Often the things that we don't like about other people are the things that we sometimes don't like about ourselves.
That's very profound, but yes. I still think it's hypocrisy. So, you know,
he was tuned in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and even Sierra asked why the jury should reward flippers after she spent, what, two tribal councils yelling at people to flip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I could have answered either of them without, you know, massive Eliza-type eye rolls. But all of them managed, and I have to give them all tremendous kudos for that.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't really a big emotional final tribal council in terms of fireworks. Like, there was definitely, you know, there was some crying, and the Kimmy thing was a little bit of a bump. But overall, it was a pretty tame final tribal council.
Right, which does raise the question of how important were those jury questions at the end. You know, on Twitter, Stephen claimed that the jurors had ideas where they were going to vote, but most of them were willing to be convinced, which, you know, is something that Savage also said. Personally, I tend to doubt it. Yep. I think it became clear during the questions where they were headed. Even when Spencer gave some decent answers, I could tell the jurors weren't biting. So I told Stephen on Twitter that I think about the only way Spencer could have convinced them to vote with him was if he told them he was pregnant.
Oh, well, I suggested that to Tasha also.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a lot more of a miracle.
That would be quite a miracle. Says it. Yeah. So that's the final tribal council. So do you want to talk about why everybody lost, or do you just want to just go into why Jeremy won?
Let's do an overall wrap up here.
Okay.
You know, last week I looked ahead at the final six and said there were three people who had pretty much zero chance of winning, two who might and one who probably would. Of the first three, Keith didn't play a strategic game at all, and Kimmy played it too late and too obviously when she did, while Tasha played a strategic game that would only take her to the final three but could almost never get her a win. Keith was flexible because he essentially had no direction, but Kimmy and Tasha were too inflexible for too much of the game. As for the other two non-winners, both Spencer and Kelly played very good games that could have potentially resulted in a win under different circumstances. Steven said on Twitter that in any other season, Spencer or Tasha would have played a winning game. Now, I would substitute Kelly in for Tasha because Tasha purposely brought people to the end, even though they could beat her. But I think we have to at least take his opinion into consideration and agree that they played solid games.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem with their games, I think, was that they were so focused on getting to the final three that they didn't seem to consider what would happen once they got there. Whereas Kelly would have had a very legitimate chance of winning the game if she had won that final immunity. Both Spencer and Kelly understood the need to scheme and plot, and both did so well, but both had their own problems to face. Spencer was torn between the dark side and the light side. Star Wars is still in my head. I saw that, you know, a couple hours before this.
Hey, no spoilers. Only no Survivor spoilers.
That's right. Okay. Spencer was torn between playing the game as solely a strategic game and trying to make real personal bonds. He took a bad combination of both of them, and then he couldn't pull the trigger on the one person he truly needed to eliminate from the game in order to win. I thought it was interesting that Spencer has now said voting out Steven was a bad idea, you know, not just to get back on the good side of RHAP fans, but because he didn't realize just how dangerous Jeremy was. And on top of that, Steven ended up being one of the biggest campaigners against him in the jury house, which really doesn't surprise me given that Jeremy showed Steven real loyalty by saving him with an idol while Spencer vowed loyalty but voted him out.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly found herself in bad position after bad position. She maneuvered well, she made some great moves, but ultimately, she couldn't break the bonds of loyalty that Jeremy had crafted among his inner circle. In Steven's Jury Speaks video, he called Jeremy a true leader who brought honesty and trust and loyalty to the game. Now, I wouldn't go quite that far into the fanboy realm, especially knowing, you know, what we now know about how Jeremy used that appearance of honesty and trust and loyalty. But what's important is how Jeremy made everyone feel. I'm not sure it's possible to play a perfect game. But Jeremy's, it was up there. Might not have been the best ever, but it was top five or seven.
Top five, baby. Wow.
Yeah. His plan of using meat shields and brain shields and placing himself in the center of a web of allies worked incredibly well. That's one reason I shake my head even more at the people posting on Facebook and Twitter to complain that Jeremy won because of a sympathy vote. I just want to reach through the screen and grab them and shake them and ask, did you even watch the season? Did you pay attention? Did you understand what was actually going on? But, you know, I know that it's pointless because those people didn't understand. They're not our happers.
Well, I don't want to make it seem like you only understand Survivor if you listen to this podcast, but I think that there are some people who are probably not as sophisticated with how they view the game and don't really understand what happened.
Right, but let's be clear. The people who are listening to this podcast are obviously the smartest people.
Yeah, well, especially when we're, you know, an hour and change into talking about why somebody won the season after it's over. Yeah, these are the people that really know what's going on.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, let's just be clear about one thing. And I said it before, but I'll say it one more time. Even if Jeremy didn't say anything about the baby, he still wins in a landslide.
Yeah.
He played an extremely good game. He schemed and plotted well. He showed a great deal of flexibility. He had a masterful social game and managed to never show up on the radar as a threat. That is why Jeremy won and everyone else lost.
All right. Congratulations once again to Jeremy. And I very much look forward to a deep dive with him at some point in the future to talk about what David Bloomberg says is one of the top 5 to 7 Survivor games of all time. Wow. That's high praise.
It is. It is. It might even be higher than that. Who knows? It's hard to, place them all right after they've happened. It's almost like you need to wait a few years and then look at the evolution of strategy as they've happened.
Yeah, because the hyperbole does set in when you're that close to it. But I feel like that for Jeremy, while there were mistakes along the way, and that's why I have a problem with the P word in terms of when we're talking about perfection, it was a very, very great game against amazing competition. And I think that that is a really big factor when we look at this, where he played a game which was dominant, but at the same time didn't call enough attention to itself to be able to make people be able to target him. And he won in a clean sweep against all-star competition. Like it's very, very impressive what he did.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Now, with that said, as we wrap up the season, I do want to disagree with him on one thing.
Okay.
Because he told Malcolm that the game has changed and voting blocks are here to stay. And I just still think that's wrong. I mean, as I've said, they really aren't all that new. But what has changed in this season was mostly a result of the combination of returning strategic players combined with the many swaps that were thrown at them to mix things up. And, you know, let's face it, what won it at the end for Jeremy? It wasn't voting blocks. It was a solid alliance that he took to the end based on perceived loyalty. So I'm going to have to disagree with his thought that there is some sweeping change coming. And I know I'm not changing any of these rules because of it.
Okay. It will remain to be seen if voting blocks did change the game or not. I tend to agree with you. I think that for the people that are there, it's like, no, this was different. And it's like, well, no, it was pretty similar to most other seasons.
Now, one thing that was different was that there was an extraordinary level of play. And I don't think it was 100% because it was returning players. It was that most of the players who were voted back were at least somewhat strategic. You know, I remember when the voting was going on and I was arguing against people who wanted Wu and Keith, you know, to go in there. And the people on the Wu and Keith side said they didn't want a season full of strategists only. And while both of those guys gave us some amusing moments, I think this season did show you can have a season that is mostly filled with strategists and it will still be extremely compelling. So I hope Survivor takes that into account in the future, not just for returning players, but for new players as well.
So, David, we have nothing to preview now except for Survivor 32, Survivor Ko Rong, Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn. Are you excited for a return to the BBB format?
I'm never particularly excited for a particular format. I want to see the people. And
Beast Mode Cowboy, is that who you're excited about?
You know what? I did not watch that season of Big Brother.
You're in for a treat, my friend.
Yeah, what I've heard about him has, let's say, not been positive.
Yeah.
Something to do with the way he treats women. I don't know.
You'll be rewriting the Survivor rule book probably after this season. We're going to have your mind blown.
Oh, even more than voting blocks, huh?
Yes. Yes, sir. Okay. So, David, what a great job this season. I heard from so many people that they really did enjoy having this sort of podcast at the end of the week to be able to go back and sort of process everything that we talked about. And so it got people ready for the next episode. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. And I wanted to say thanks to you and everyone who's been listening, because it really has been a lot of fun to bring back this column in an audio format, especially in combination with you and your insights. So The strategy has obviously always been my favorite part of Survivor, and it was great to be able to talk about it like this again.
All right. Well, you could follow David on Twitter. He'll be tweeting all through the offseason at David Bloomberg. Do you have that one last hashtag for Jeremy and his win?
I have three possible ones here.
Okay, final three.
We've got Survivor Unicorn.
Okay.
Heidick-esque.
Okay.
And Pregnant Spencer.
Well, I don't want to upset Spencer with anything else on social
media. That's a good point.
He's barely hanging on, I think, right now. So let's go with Survivor Unicorn.
Okay. And Steven will be happy because we got that from him.
He'll be very happy. We owe him royalties. All right. Yeah. David, thank you so much.
Thank you. Love you, Bechacho.
Love you, Bechacho. All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. David Bloomberg back here on Rob is a Podcast for the final time in 2015. So we've got a couple of other fun shows that I'm working on this week. Of course, News AF with Tyson Apostle and Danny Bryson. That's going to be back again, and working on another couple of things. Once I have that more firmly down, I will let you guys know. Also, for next week, I am working on the Best of 2015 podcast. I'm still listening to a bunch of clips that are being submitted. So if you would like to let us know about one of your favorite RHAP moments from 2015, go to robiswebsite.com/best of 2015. That's the number, robiswebsite.com/best of 2015. And let us know in the comments on that page what moment you want to hear on that show as we count down the top 10 moments of 2015 on RHAP. All right. And also thanks everybody who's been using our link for Amazon.com. Greatly appreciated. Looking forward to getting back into it with more podcasts this week. Just because it's Christmas week, we're not slowing down too much. Enjoy, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.